Well, you got a guest speaker tonight. That should be good. Look forward to hearing that. It's good to be back, Sunset. Some of you are not sitting in your proper seats, Bruce and Janice. Good to see the rest of you haven't changed. In June, we at Brookline celebrated our five-year anniversary for being out there on the property, and that is thanks to you. And some of you are there with us, and we appreciate that very much, your encouragement along the way. There's another anniversary that's coming up in 2 months that won't be so nice to celebrate. You know what that one is. Our whole nation went through that 10 years ago. I can't get it out of my mind. It was September 11, 2001. Thousands of planes were flying over our land, and when the first plane hit that first World Trade Center tower, people started wondering what was going on. You remember the feeling. Seemed like an accident, but how could that be an accident? Then the second plane hit the second tower, and it was clear. And then the Pentagon was hit, and everyone began wondering what would happen next, fearing what might happen next. And the U.S. started to do what had never been done before, grounding every non-military plane in the skies. And the FAA ordered over 6,500 planes down immediately, but not before the fourth plane could be taken over by the same group of hijackers that day that first hit their targets. This one was United Airlines Flight 93. It took off from Newark, New Jersey, and was headed to San Francisco. But the commotion at the front of the plane spelled trouble right away. And unlike the passengers on the first three doomed flights, these Americans started to understand what was going on. Cell phones and in-flight phones and news reports coming in their ears. It dawned on them, the passengers of 93, that the people who commandeered this plane intended to use it as a weapon to create more terror. And it's still uncertain where they were headed. Most likely the White House or the Capitol building in D.C. What was certain was that they would succeed unless someone did something to stop them. And that's where a man named Todd came in. Todd Beamer, 32-year-old, on the plane that morning. And he's on the in-flight telephone speaking with GTE supervisor Lisa Jefferson, about 13 minutes long. That's their conversation. Todd's one of the 10 passengers forced to sit in the rear of the plane on the ground with the flight attendants who are still back there. The rest of the passengers are crowded up front in the front of the plane. And Beamer told Jefferson on the phone that day that there were three hijackers with knives. Jefferson told Beamer about the other flights that were crashing. And Jim McKinnon of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette said Beamer told Jefferson he and the others on the plane had decided they would not be pawns in the hijacker suicidal plot. You remember this, don't you? The plan for those folks was to first jump the hijacker who looked like he might have had a bomb on him, strapped to him, then break into the cockpit where the other two were flying the plane. Beamer asked Jefferson to pray with him, and then the two together recited the 23rd Psalm. And with commotion in the background, Todd dropped the phone. The line was still open, so Jefferson heard those now famous words, "Let's roll. Let's roll." Nobody knows exactly what happened after that, but by the sounds heard over the open phone, by the other conversations going on in the plane, they must have somehow subdued the first terrorists and rushed as a group to the front of the plane, broken through the cockpit door, and wrestled with the hijackers and disrupted their suicidal plans to kill even more people that day. What we know for sure is that that plane went down, crashed in a field 80 miles southeast of Pittsburgh, 9:58 a.m., killing everyone on board, not much left of that flight, but nobody else died that day anywhere else in the state. When we relive that story, and you did with me for just a moment, but don't you think about those heroes on the plane that day and what they did? And what resonates within me is one word. It's bravery. Bravery. Courage. Courage like, I don't know if I know within myself. In a horrible, devastating, and depressing day, that act was the first American victory in a day of defeats. Can you imagine what that must have been like, sitting on the floor of the plane in the rear, wondering what was going to happen next, trying to decide what we would do next, Todd Beamer and Jeffrey Glick and Thomas Burnett Jr. and Todd Bingham and more who banded together on the plane that day to stop the men bent on evil. They knew they would die if nobody did something. They knew they probably would die even if they did something. Sitting there with nothing but courage to fight the men, to die if necessary. Average folks on just another plane, just another day, but forced to fight those who would give great pleasure in themselves in inflicting pain in the innocent. Maybe you've got a definition for what courage is. Maybe it would differ from my definition, but we all know it when we see it, and that is courage. That's what courage looks like. That's what courage sounds like on a plane going down. Let's roll. Karl Barth said, courage is fear that has said its prayers. And I'm grateful for folks like that on a day like 9/11, the courageous ones, and others throughout history like the military men and women we just prayed for, who all through the years have stood up against the world powers determined to do great harm. Maybe some are in this audience today. The individuals, both black and white, who stood up against prejudice and ignorance, fought against slavery and discrimination in this country of ours. And of course, the God followers, who all through the centuries have stood against the powers of darkness, gladly giving up their own lives, refusing to bow to any other God but Jehovah. That brings us to this story in the Scriptures. It's in the Old Testament. It's in Daniel chapter 3, and I know you know it. Probably the youngest among us could tell us the story. Daniel chapter 3, God's own people, because of their rebellion and their sin, have been given over to the enemy. God has given the Babylonians power to conquer his own people. He hadn't given up on them. He hasn't stopped loving them. He's just letting them reap what they have already been sowing and taste the bitter consequences of their own selfish desires and sin. And those who didn't die by the enemy's sword were led away into their land, into captivity. And that's right where we find Daniel and his three friends. They're in Babylon, the great and powerful and awesome and awful place, the home of the great and feared and wicked King Nebuchadnezzar. And from the start, these young men refused to do what they were told to do. With courage, they stood up. When God's laws stood against the laws of their land, their captors, they stood for God. And in a simple test, like what you would eat, they chose the Lord's ways over their captors, and God blessed them for it. So there is Daniel and Hananiah and Mishael and Azariah, and we've come to know them as Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and they stood up, stood strong. The king noticed them, gave them positions in his government. He loved them. They were recognized among the wise men. They were sharp, the top of their class. But at some point, as we knew it would happen, the king's orders conflict with God's commands. And Daniel is not there when this happens. This conflict includes the other three. They are there. And on this day, the great egotistical ruler has set up a golden image of himself, 90 feet tall, made of gold. I don't know if it looked like him or not, but there it is in the plain of Dura. And he gives the word to all of the people who are going to gather there on that day. When that music plays, when you hear it in your ear, you bow down and worship the statue. That's what will happen. So the celebration is set and the invitations go out, and all of the wise men are there, including the three at the dedication. And then, as it should have happened, it happens. The instruments start playing and everyone hears it, and everyone hits a knee. Everyone bows down. Every person begins to bow except these three. These three stand up. They refuse to go down. The other wise men rat them out. They get the word to the king, and the king is furious with these men. And he brings them in and dresses them down and delivers to them the ultimatum. And there in chapter 3, you can read in verse 15. If you do not worship it, the statue, the king says, if you do not worship it, you will be thrown immediately into a blazing furnace. Then what God will be able to rescue you from my hand? He gives them a second chance to do the right thing because they obviously missed it the first time. Here's the warning. Here's the question hanging in the air. What God can rescue you then? Huh? The three Hebrews, though, had already decided. They'd hatched their plan. But it wasn't really a plan, and it didn't need hatching. It was a conviction of the heart. It was deep down inside, took hold. They didn't have to think about what to do. They knew what to do. What else could they do? They had to stand. They had to stand. I don't know why the king was going to give them a second chance, but he does. And in a rage, he tells them what will happen this time if they do not go down. But the three men don't need a second chance because it will end up just like the first one. The warning will not weaken their knees or their resolve. They will stand. And about the God that the king questions, well, they have an answer for that too. And I love this. Verses 16 and following. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to save us from it, and he will rescue us from your hand, O king. But even if he does not, we want you to know, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold that you have set up. And that, my friends, is courage. That's what it looks like. And I love that. Don't you know all the reasons they could have bowed? Can't you hear the questions in their minds? Can't you hear the reasoning, the rationalization that could have gone on in their heads? It didn't, but you know these excuses, don't you? What they might have thought, what they could have said, everybody else is doing it. Well, we can't stand for God later if we're dead today. We were put in power by the Lord to help the cause, so we will honor this position. How can God use us in the future unless we survive this? We'll bow the knee, but we won't bow the heart. God will understand. God will forgive. Many reasons to bow, but one reason to stand. And that's all they needed. It was Jehovah. So they stood. You ever wonder how many other Babylonians bowed on that day? I don't know how many were out in that plain, gathered around. I don't know how many invitations came out, who was invited, who was just standing there. But do you know how many bowed? The Babylonians? All of them. All of them. And I don't know, because it doesn't say, but do you think there were other Hebrews around? Were there any other God followers in the crowd who were also in captivity? And I'm going to guess if they were there, then they bowed too. Everybody bowed. Every single person in the plane bowed, but three. Standing there alone. Just three. Can you name any of the other people who bowed down? I can't. I don't know. It doesn't say. All of them bowed and all of them slipped into history and nothing is said of the rest. They're just like everybody else. We don't know a thing about every other man and woman and child who bowed down to the idol that day, but look at us here today. Thousands of years later, telling the story of the three courageous men who stood. Still today, inspired by their courage. The nameless masses have always done what everybody else does. They're still doing it today, and they will go down in history as nothing. But the ones who stand out are the ones who stand up. The ones that inspire us are those who stand for the Lord. Can I point out a few things in the story that you probably already knew? Here's one. Did you notice that these three Hebrews, the faithful, were not jerks when they did this? They didn't pull any punches either. They didn't make a scene except doing what they had to do. They just stood there. They didn't make a stink. They stuck out like sore thumbs that day, but still they didn't set out to offend anyone. They just didn't get along with everybody else either. They didn't go along to get along. They didn't care. You ever met some of those Christians who are jerks, who have to make a scene and become a stench in everybody's nostrils just to make it? Did you know if you stand for the Lord, you can answer respectfully even when your decision seems absolutely disrespectful? You don't have to explain because an explanation may not help. They didn't explain. How can a pagan understand the convictions of the faithful anyway? Try if you'd like. Give it a shot, but just stand. In your conviction, just stand. And even when these guys stood against the king to his face, do you see how politely they did it? They didn't offer a defense. They didn't make a case. They didn't even beg for their lives. They just stood there. For the sake of the Lord, they stood their ground. They would not bow. And notice this too. Did you see this? Because of their faith, Nebuchadnezzar spared their lives. No, he didn't. You didn't miss that, did you? No, because of their faith, he killed them. Or he tried to. So I don't know what we expect, but if we will stand true to His Word, stand on the promises of the Lord, stand up for the Lord and never bow, you know what might happen to us? Well, it may not be a blessing that comes our way, but do you know what happened to them? They were thrown in the fire. The men who threw them into the fire perished with the heat, but the three men who were thrown in survived. And the king looked in there and saw these guys in the fire, still standing. Not just standing, but walking. And not just three, but now four, a fourth man. Nebuchadnezzar saw something in his day that I would encourage you to see in your day. Because it was obvious to him, to Nebuchadnezzar, he saw it. Do you see it? You know what he saw? God standing with the faithful. God standing with the faithful. Do you see it? Is that just a story from the Old Testament and means nothing to us? Or do you see that today? Those men stood and were punished for standing, but they didn't stand alone. They were preparing to die and could have died, maybe should have died, but didn't die. And the Lord stood with them the whole time. When you stand and when you are punished for standing so that you stand alone in the fire, look around. Even with your last breath, even with your eyes, look. These eyes may fail you. You can't see it with these eyes, but watch, look, and you will see the Lord standing with you. Even in your death, He will not leave you. You stand for Him and He will stand with you. It's a promise. People all over the globe this week are going to do what is easy. They'll do what gets them by. They'll buy another day. They'll go along with the crowd. They'll continue in their bad habits. They will sell their souls to the devil. They'll cut their own consciences. They'll do whatever it takes to continue to live. That's what everybody else all around the world would do this week. And then there's another group called Christians. And they will do what is right. They will stand when others kneel. They will take the taunts and the jeers and the ridicule. They won't do what comes naturally or what is accepted socially or what is best personally. They will follow the Lord. Christians this week all over the world, though few, will follow the Lord wherever that leads and whatever that means. They will stand. And if it means going against the grain, they'll do it. Swimming upstream, they'll do it. If it means standing alone, they'll do it. If it means danger and even death, they will do it, right? And if they do what nobody else does, and if they don't do what everybody else does, it will take courage. It will take courage. I love how they answered the king. They knew what God would do and they trusted He would do it. They knew He could, they just didn't know if He would. They didn't fear what might happen, they just trusted God to do as He pleased. And if they died, then they died. But that wouldn't change the truth about God. So they're very clear with the king. If they die, their deaths would not reflect on God. So if they burned to a crisp on the floor of the furnace, or if they came out smelling like a rose, it didn't matter. God would still be God. Just thinking about burning. Wow. It wasn't that long ago that Jonna made breakfast. I wasn't making it. She was. But I helped her just by getting the biscuits out of the oven. And as I reached in there with my pot holder, somehow my little pinky finger right here on this hand reached past the pot holder and touched the metal. I don't know why he did it. But he did it, and that hurt my little tiny finger. And a little spot on my little tiny finger, and I was in pain. You feel sorry for me, don't you? It hurt. Really, I can't imagine being thrown into a raging fire. Can you? Just the anticipation of what it would feel like should instill fear in anyone. Just thinking about sensing your own skin melt on your bones, feeling the burning over every inch of your body, breathing in the flame so that what is on the inside is burning along with the outside. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine dying like that? How could you face that fire with courage? I want the faith to say, like Esther, if I die, I die. And walk in and face the king, the danger head on. I want the faith to say, God can save me. But even if he doesn't, it doesn't change a thing about him. I want to say, bring it on if you have to. Bring it on, but I will not bow. I will continue to stand. I will not give up my conviction or my faith. I will stand. And it's my choice, you know. Did you know that? Courage is a choice. Fear is a choice. It's more than what you feel. It's how you choose to act. That's why Moses and Joshua in the early days of Israel's history keep telling the Israelites not to fear. Don't fear. Don't be afraid. It's because they could choose what to do. It didn't matter what feelings came upon them. They didn't have to be shackled by it or driven by it. It may come over you, but it doesn't have to overwhelm you. And the will of the man can master the fear in any man. I like how John Wayne said, courage is being scared to death, but saddling up anyway. Mark Twain said, courage is resistance to fear, mastery of fear, not absence of fear. Heroes still fear, but they act despite their fears. I will say this, the scriptures don't. So this is just me. I'm just thinking. I'm guessing that Jesus feared the cross. That's my guess. Those are my words. Because I can't imagine facing that and not fearing it. The pain and the torture, the agony on the cross, his death, what he went through, the hell he would endure, the full wrath of God. But if he feared, his fear did not rule him. He overcame his fear. He acted as if he had none because his confidence in God overpowered his fear. Jesus chose to take the blows, take the spit, take the fist. Take the lashes, take the thorns, take the nails, take the agony, the loneliness, the wrath of God for me. He chose it. That is courage. I don't doubt that your life is filled with uncertainties and unpleasantries. In a crowd like this, who knows what you've been through? I don't doubt that you have gone through some things that are indescribable or going through some things that are almost too much to bear. And if you haven't yet, you will. I don't doubt that. You could accurately call them a nightmare. Fear may have driven you at times and it may flood into your soul. That comes naturally to a man, but only if he allows it will it overwhelm him. I don't know what Jesus felt, but I know what Jesus did. And when Paul writes his letter to the Corinthians, 1 Corinthians 16, as he's closing it all out, he says, be on your guard. Stand firm in the faith. Be men of courage. Be strong. You get the feeling that the days ahead for America may be great, but also may be horrible. You're watching the news, aren't you? Not just the economy that's crumbling, the moral fiber of our country. Do you wonder if our kids and grandkids and great-grandkids will be forced into a fire if they don't kneel? I don't know what's coming, but you already read this. We heard it read, "The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear?" Maybe we're going to need to start saying that more often. "The Lord is the stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? When evil men advance against me to devour my flesh, when my enemies and my foes attack me, they will stumble and fall." We'd better teach our kids this. "Though an army besiege me, my heart will not fear. Though war breaks out against me, even then will I be confident." The faithful ought to often take a stroll through the Scriptures and see how many times God said to His leader or His people, "Do not be afraid." Watch how many times Jesus said to His followers, "Do not be afraid." Watch how many times an angel of the Lord said to the faithful, "Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. Do not be terrified. Do not be afraid." It's a choice. Fear may be all around us. Fear may be sinking in on us. Fear may pass through our minds and our hearts, but it is our decision whether it makes a home there or not. Fear may be natural, but we who trust in the Lord, we will not be mastered by it. I know what is natural, but we do what is spiritual. Several years ago, Jenny Owens sang a song, and I like the words. "The pathway is broken and the signs are unclear, and I don't know the reason why you brought me here. But just because you love me the way that you do, I'm going to walk through the valley if you want me to. Because I'm not who I was when I took my first step, and I'm clinging to the promise you're not through with me yet. So if all of these trials bring me closer to you, then I will go through the fire if you want me to. It may not be the way I would have chosen when you led me through a world that's not my home, but you never said it would be easy. You only said I'd never go alone. So when the whole world turns against me and I'm all by myself and I can't hear you answer my cries for help, I'll remember the suffering your love put you through, and I will go through the valley if you want me to." At the end of the book of Hebrews, as the Hebrews writer considers what Jesus went through for you, then he reminds you of the promise, of the truth that God has said, "Never will I leave you, never will I forsake you." So, I don't know if you believe this, but I'll say it for you. So we say with confidence, "The Lord is my helper. I will not be afraid. What can man do to me?" Take courage, my brothers and sisters, and continue to stand for the Lord. I don't know what you needed to hear tonight, and I don't know what you need tonight. If you're a Christian, if you need strength, help, comfort, prayers, love from this church, I guarantee you'll get it. And if for some reason you have never bowed a knee to the only one who deserves it, the Lord God Almighty, if you have not submitted to His will in your life, if you have not given up on your sins and believed in Him and given your life to Him and been immersed into Jesus Christ, then do it tonight. Do it tonight. Whatever you need, you can do it now. Let's stand and sing this song.